of Christmases Long, Long Ago is my new book, arriving for the 2025 Christmas season. Find out what Christmas was like centuries ago. Sneak preview, it was weird, and spooky, and rowdy, kind of gross sometimes. Find it wherever books are sold, in hardcover from Lions Press, and audiobook from Recorded Books. It's Christmas as you've never seen it before, and it makes a great gift. Hey, it's Brian. Back with another episode as we ramp up to this 2025 Christmas season. If you're listening in real time, it's now just a week after Halloween. Some say that's still too early for Christmas, but if you are listening in real time, then I'll bet you're not one of them. The Hallmark Channel has already begun airing Christmas movies. Streaming services like Pluto TV are offering seasonal content. And we see reports in the news almost every day about some radio station somewhere that switched over to its all-Christmas format. Yes, the frost may still be on the pumpkin, but it's starting to look a little something like Christmas. And speaking of movies and seasonal content, maybe that's one of the ways that you're easing into Christmas yourself this year. Nothing beats a Christmas movie on a cozy evening to summon the Christmas spirit. Now, for better or worse, we are practically drowning in options when it comes to Christmas movies. Even the last 1 or 2 years alone have given us more movies than any single person could reasonably watch in a season. To make sense of the landscape, to avoid decision paralysis, and to gain an appreciation for the Christmas movie as an art form unto itself, film critic Alonzo Duralde is here to help. His book, Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, is revised and updated and ready to guide you through the season. Now just one quick note before we get to my conversation with Alonzo. My audio will sound a little different than it normally does. Unexpected technical difficulties, etc. These things happen from time to time over 10 seasons of podcasting. Oopsie daisy. But Alonzo sounds great, as always. So, without any further delay... Alonzo Duralde, welcome back to Christmas Past.
Such a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Brian.
I remember a conversation you and I had maybe a couple of years ago now, where you mentioned something that on the one hand just sounds so simple, but it struck me, where you said that the Christmas movie as we know it depends on television. There were Christmas movies before TV, but we didn't think of them in the same way. And then I would imagine that after that, that we went through other little historical epochs, right, with the advent of cable television or VCRs and DVDs.
Absolutely.
And so you open the book saying that since the time you wrote the first edition of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, 2010, up till now, we've entered a new age of Christmas movies. Talk to me a little bit about that. What's new?
Yeah, I think the Hallmark effect has had a ripple into the culture in general. I think that there has been a hunger, clearly, for these kinds of movies during the season. Like, as cable television is dying, somehow Hallmark Channel still manages to become this sort of zeitgeisty moment when they unveil their, 20, 30, 40 movies of the year. And, they put on a cruise, where the stars come out. They do all of this sort of ancillary stuff. And it's inspired a lot of imitators, not just sort of Lifetime and Up and BET, the usual suspects, but like Netflix really got into the Christmas game. And so now they're going to give you like 4 or 5 big titles every year. And I think that the existence of Hallmark movies has altered or at least affected the way that theatrical Christmas movies are made now. There was definitely a period where I felt like all the Christmas movies we were getting were in sort of directly addressing what aren't you going to see for free at home on Hallmark, So that was when we were getting more like R-rated comedies. We were getting films with all black casts at a time that Hallmark was really doing a bad job of inclusion and equity. I think that whether it's a response to or an attempt to copy their success, the Hallmark footprint has really made an impact on the Christmas movie world.
Yeah, I think it's changed our expectations around not only what kind of Christmas movies get made or like what a Christmas movie looks like, but also how we consume them. And you mentioned this in the beginning of the book too. Like, not only are we now largely streaming our content rather than going down to Blockbuster or digging into our collection of physical media, but also that we're just inundated with it. In the 2010, Hallmark put out a dozen Christmas movies. Now it's 50, and they're competing with the 50 that Netflix is putting out and so on. We're just awash with this stuff. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I mean, it's good for those of us who like this stuff. You know, I think it's great that that this audience has been discovered. And I think that in a way, you know, you see the same. I don't know if the two go hand in hand, but certainly in the podcast space, for example, you know, when I put the book out in 2010, I think maybe Lee had already started the Christmas stocking by that point or was about to. But, you know, compare that to now where you have all of these year-round podcasts that are talking about Hallmark movies, that are talking about horror movies, that are talking about TV specials, music, you know, coziness in general, you know, all of these different topics that fall under the Christmas umbrella. And so, you know, I think it's sort of opened this door, not just for increased interest in Christmas as a media subject, but, you know, a way to kind of not limit it to the Christmas season. You know, I think that so many of the podcasts that we listen to now function, you know, throughout the year. Hallmark itself reruns their Christmas movies once a week to give people a little taste of holiday magic, you know. And I think that, you know, SiriusXM has a devoted holiday channel that runs all year long. So it's clearly become a thing where there's a groundswell I don't know that Hallmark knew what they were getting into. I think they lucked into it in a lot of ways, but when they started getting numbers for these things and building up their library, it kind of tapped into something in the collective unconscious right now that we, you know, need, want, desire, require a little Christmas right this very minute.
But I think the question is, have we or will we soon reach peak Christmas movie? You keep thinking, how many more can you pack in? And then every year we find out.
Well, you know, I think this year does kind of mark a turning point, because last year there were something like, you know, between Hallmark Mystery and their then new Hallmark Plus streaming service, there were something like 50 new Christmas movies last year. And this year there's like 24. Which is a real big cutback. You know, they're starting to pivot into things like reality shows and limited series and stuff. So they're not putting as many eggs in the Christmas movie basket as they've been doing, you know, just in the last 2, 3, 4 years. I think also there's a market change as well. I talked to a producer who was saying that a lot of the films that would get produced for US television, whether they wound up on Hallmark or Lifetime or a streamer or whatever, were very often getting sold to Europe, either in TV or as a theatrical film or whatever. But that Netflix getting in the game has really changed that, because, you know, when Netflix airs something, they air it everywhere on the planet pretty much. And so suddenly there was not as much of a market for, you know, this sort of Hallmark shaped Christmas movie when it was already just sitting there on Netflix. So yeah, I think we're already starting to see a bit of a retreat, but I think that once this, you know, Pandora's Christmas box has been opened, I don't know that there's any way to close it.
So as a film critic, what do you think of these movies?
You know, somebody was asking me, you know, why I didn't include Hallmark movies in Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And part of it is that I did that in another book, the one I wrote with the Deck the Hallmark guys. But I kind of church and state the two, because I think Hallmark Christmas movies operate on a different level. You know, my joke is always, these are movies made by a TV network that is owned by a greeting card company. And so in the same way that you get a greeting card from someone that has like a beautiful snowy landscape or a Christmas village on the front, and you prop it up on your mantle, and every so often during the season, you'll look up and you'll see that landscape and think, ah, yes, it's Christmas. You know, Hallmark movies sort of operate in the same function. You turn the channel on and you are not more than 30 seconds away from a tree being lit or snowball fight or somebody, you know, like making cookies or whatever, all of these different kind of visual cues that you can sort of look up while you're walking through the room or folding your laundry or whatever and think, ah, Christmas. I think they're very satisfying, and some of them are I think quite good, but they are very formulaic. They are designed in a certain way. And it's not so much the classic, you know, big city lady who doesn't love Christmas comes to the small town and the flannel hunk, blah, blah, blah. Like they definitely mixed up the formula some. But in terms of the fact that you know what the general arc of the romance is going to be, that there's going to be a romance and that it's all going to end very happily. You know, these movies have a very specific shape. And I think that movies get to not have to have that shape and get to go off in whatever directions, you know, that they're interested in pursuing.
So of the movies that you included in the book, I would imagine one of the first orders of business is realizing you can't include everything. So you have to pick and choose what makes it in, what doesn't. Tell me how you put together this collection.
Well, you know, this has always been a very subjective list on my part. I never was trying to create an encyclopedia because that would just be, you know, such a doorstop, you know. I would never finish writing it, you know. So even going back to the first edition, it was very much like, these are the films that I really enjoy the most or had the most to talk about or know that people really love. And they're part of, you know, the what we consider the canon of this sort of thing. And so then for this edition, I had to kind of stay to the same general size just because of publishing logistics, but include all of these other movies, you know, the cavalcade of new feature films that we've had since 2010, but then also some classics that I just didn't get to the first time around, which meant that I had to kind of go through and shrink a lot of films that had been given a sort of full entry to now maybe like a two sentence, oh, you should also see this one. Mm-hmm. And that was hard, you know, I had to kind of, you know, say goodbye to some favorites, but they were either films that I think don't generally get a huge audience or that already do and don't need my, you know, my backing, you know? So I kind of had to go through and cherry pick films out of the first film, shrink them down to a sort of, you know, inclusion, and then give that space to something new I was writing about.
So you break them up into categories. We have the kids movies, the dramas, the whatever, and you end with bad Christmas movies. And again, you didn't, if they're bad, why are we including them?
So I end with the classics, first of all.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
The bad Christmas movies are the penultimate chapter, okay. Let's be fair.
But why is it important to include a chapter about bad Christmas movies?
Because, you know, I think bad movies can be really entertaining. You know, I'm one of those people that grew up with, you know, the Medveds, you know, Golden Turkey Awards and the 50 worst films of all time. And so I, you know, there can be pleasure in a film that doesn't quite work, but that you at least see what the intent was. And very often, I think movies that are quote unquote bad, repeated exposure kind of puts you on their wavelength, whether you meant to or not. You know, the Mexican Santa Claus from 1959, which I think most people got introduced to when it was roasted on Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's a movie I go back and watch every year. It's bananas. And but in an interesting way, you know, I mean, you what you're seeing is these sort of like, you know, we jokingly call it like, you know, baby's first surrealism. But also, you know, it's a thing that I find really fascinating in filmmaking in general, which is when you are working with limited means, how do you execute your vision? So here you've got this guy who's trying to make this very elaborate grand fantasy about Santa Claus with 5 cents. And so, okay, we can't get an army of little people actor to play the elves, so we'll just cast children and we'll say that they're, you know, Santa's helpers. We can't afford a big snowy, you know, vista for the North Pole. We'll just say that Santa lives in the clouds and build a castle out of cardboard and put it, you know, in a cotton ball cloud. We can't afford live reindeer. We'll just say that the reindeer are wind-up toys, you know? So it's bizarre, but at the same time, you have to give it up to the director for being creative about working within his means. And so, you know, in the book, I say it's sort of like that ornament that you make when you're 5 and there's like glitter falling off of it and you've misspelled Jesus's name or whatever, you know, it's just, but it's charming and you want to look at it every year. And so I think these movies that don't quite go where they're supposed to go can be fun viewing.
One thing I've never understood about Christmas movies is that, or some Christmas movies rather, is mixing things like horror or action with Christmas, because they are the two exceptions. Everything else is romance or, you know,
tearjerker,
crazy family coming together, something like that. How does that make sense?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, the Christmas movie is a very malleable entity and it will loan itself to different things. And I think that, you know, for example, the action movie can be a case in which, You know, if this is a movie about a robbery, you know, you're basically dealing with greed and avarice and you know, the desire to take something from someone again. And it's at this, in the season of giving, in the season of sharing, in the season of, you know, like partaking with others, you know. And so I think that's kind of it's a direct statement, you know. It's right up there with, you know, when they the fundraisers in Scrooge tell him, you know, this is a season in which, you know, a bounty is celebrated and want is keenly felt or something, you know. And so that can motivate your crime movie, you know. And I think with a horror movie, and in some cases with a crime movie, Christmas is one of the last sort of pure things that we leave ourselves in society, where you can be cynical about it and it can be grossly commercial, but at its heart, we still think of Christmas as this good thing, as this pure white snowdrift of goodwill and cheer and peace and you know, brotherhood and all of that stuff. And so to have, you know, one perfect spray of blood against that white snowdrift stands out, and it's vivid. And so I think the doings of a horror movie or of a crime movie stand out in sharper relief because they are surrounded by what we think of as this moment of goodness and goodwill.
Hmm. You talk about children's movies, which I think, mm-hmm, as an adult, you tend to kind of want, you watch them because you want to feel the way that you did as a kid.
Sure.
Are there any that as an adult are entertaining to an adult on their own?
I think so. Yeah. Like, I think that very often we throw around the term family film when we really mean a movie that will make my 8-year-old sit still for a moment that I can take a nap on the couch. But, you know, I think in recent years we've had quite a few that are pretty good. The animated feature Klaus that was on Netflix, that was an Oscar nominee for best animated feature, which is kind of an origin story for Santa Claus, I thought is beautifully animated and you know, it's very funny and sharp. And I think there's stuff in it that adults will get that maybe kids won't, but not in a, you know, smutty way. Just last year, we had the best Christmas pageant ever, you know, based on the popular novella. And I think that one really, you know, it's about these kids disrupting this show, but it's also about a community kind of maybe learning a lesson or two about what Christmas is really about. And it's pretty bold in the fact that this is, by all measures, kind of would be considered a faith-based movie. It's directed by the guy who does like that The Chosen series. But all of the villains in that film are like the good church-going people, are these stuffy hypocrites of this church who don't want to include, you know, the rambunctious poor family. And it's about the people who understand that it's very important to include the rambunctious poor family, especially at Christmas time, that actually kind of carry the day and convey the message of the movie. So, yeah, I think there's stuff in that one definitely that both kids and adults side by side can enjoy.
There's a lot of the older movies that probably are not known to modern audiences. And whenever I discover one that I've never seen before, mm-hmm, there's that feeling of like, hey, I've discovered something, and this has been sitting there all this time without my being aware of it. It's kind of exciting to experience something like that. And I think recently the one that I discovered was Christmas in Connecticut, which I think I'd only heard about. But I think it might be one of my favorite of the older black and white Christmas movies. Are there any others that you'd recommend to people? Hey, check this one out.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, if you like Christmas in Connecticut and you are feeling Barbara Stanwyck, check out Remember the Night, which is this really fun film that she did with Fred McMurray, with whom she would famously later do a much different kind of film with Double Indemnity. But in this one, she plays a shoplifter. He is a district attorney at Christmas time. Her case gets delayed until after the new year. He winds up taking pity on her and brings her home to Christmas. And, you know, home for him is this farm in, I think it's Ohio. And we get a glimpse of you know, he's going to drop her off at her mother's house. And then we see the mother and she's a real piece of work. So instead, he brings her to his house. And in the context of his loving family and how sweet they are to her and how kind they are to her, you kind of see like how her life might have been had she had this family and not the mother, you know? And so this lovely romance unfolds between them. But of course, knowing that in January, they have to go back to New York and he has to try and put her in jail. You know, it's written by the great Preston Sturges, directed by Mitchell Leeson. It's a really wonderful film. And then if you're looking for something maybe a little harder edged, one that's new in this edition of the book that I had not seen before is a 1960 noir film called Blast of Silence, about a hired killer who goes to New York City over Christmas to do a job. And it's very bleak and existential, but at the same time, like, it is shot in New York City in 1959 at Christmas time with no permits. So if you want to see what things really look like, you know, just keep an eye on the backgrounds of, you know, where this guy's walking, and you really get a sense of what the city really looked like for the holiday.
I actually saw that movie in a theater in the Castro in San Francisco. They were doing a noir night, and it was right after Christmas. Mm. It is a very bleak movie, I can confirm for anyone.
Yeah.
So you have a whole chapter of all the different versions of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
We've had recent ones with Guy Pearce that added a lot to the story, changed quite a bit. Are there any adaptations that are just have taken the most liberties that you find interesting?
Well, I think that we're starting to see some really cool offshoots where, you know, and we've been seeing this in novels for a while. Like, there are prequel novels about, you know, Jacob Marley, and they're kind of after, you know, what happened next. But two films that leap to mind, one was an Apple TV movie and one was actually a Hallmark movie that I think kind of play with the mythos of the ghosts and what sort of heavenly bureaucracy sends them out every, you know, December 24th. So Spirited, the musical with Will Ferrell and Ryan Reynolds, I think is really charming and has great songs and kind of goes through this idea that, like, they have to pick somebody every year who gets this treatment, and, you know, they spend the entire year doing the research so that the ghosts know what to show them and where to take them and how to, like, make them repent, you know. And then there was a Hallmark movie called Ghosts of Christmas Always that does something similar, where, you know, you again get you know, past, present, and yet to come as a thing where this is their annual gig and they go to whoever has been selected and they have to know what to show them and how to guide them toward the right path. So yeah, I find both of those really entertaining, and I think they are they're working with the base they get from Dickens and then kind of spin it off into new and fun directions.
For the ones that stay faithful to the text, my favorite, I think, is the George C. Scott version.
Oh, yeah, a good one.
But everyone else I talk to says it's the, and I always forget the name of the actor.
The Alistair Sim?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. I can't argue with either of those. I think they're really great. In fact, actually, the editor of the Alistair Sim one then later directed the George C. Scott one.
Oh,
fun fact. But I was so immersed in Christmas Carol movies for a while that I would really notice, like, okay, does this one mention ignorance and want? Does this one have the people in the lighthouse? Like, you know, all these little moments of the thing that sometimes pop up in adaptations and sometimes don't. I really love the 1970 musical Scrooge with Albert Finney.
Mm.
But yeah, I think you with any of those three, you can't go wrong.
Well, I think since the first book came out, the debate about whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or whether Love Actually, or what do we make of these? Are these internet phenomena? Are we due for more of these as more Christmas movies come out?
I think it's an internet thing. I think people are just dying to talk about something, you know, that isn't the horrors of the world around us. And so it's just a fun argument to have. I think the Die Hard thing has been settled pretty definitively at this point, because, you know, this is it takes place at a Christmas party. The heist depends upon it being Christmas, you know, to be able to be carried off. It's about a husband and wife who are estranged, who are reconciling and finding each other once again over the holidays. The wife's name is Holly. You know, we get the ode to joy and sort of fake snow at the end of the movie in terms of a bunch of papers flying from a building that blew up, you know. So yeah, I think we can definitely put that one to bed, you know. I think Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut, we've generally also declared, is a Christmas movie. But yeah, it's gonna keep popping up. You know, Roof Man, which is out right now, like, the last chunk of it is set at Christmas, and the last heist he pulls is tied into, you know, Christmas Eve shopping. So maybe people want to include that one. There's a big gift giving scene in Hustlers, the Jennifer Lopez movie about strippers, you know, so I tend not to be strict about that sort of thing. If it's a Christmas movie to you, yeah, sure, why not?
Well, last question. Since the time of the first edition till now, is there any of the movies that have come out in the last 15 years that stand out to you as a favorite?
Oh, a bunch. Yeah. I mean, Klaus definitely would be one of them. I was a big Arthur Christmas fan when that came out. Just last year, we had this wonderful film called Christmas Eve in Miller's Point that I'm constantly, you know, begging people to watch because I think it's really great. It's very understated and it's not a plot heavy film at all, but I think it really captures that feeling of not just of being in a very crowded and boisterous house at Christmas time, which definitely is the kind of Christmas that I grew up on, but that sort of unspoken nostalgia of experiencing something that it's going to be the last time that you do it, whether or not you know it, you know, and the sort of bittersweet pull of that. There's been quite a few good ones in the last decade and a half, and I've constantly in my mind been thinking like, ooh, this one, if I get through the new edition, it's going to be this one. Oh, I got to put this one in, can't forget that one. So and now I'm already starting a new list for the next one whenever that happens, because this year we got a wonderful romantic comedy called The Baltimoreans that is now streaming that I very highly recommend. It's a beautiful, funny movie about a would-be improv comic and a dentist who are thrown together on Christmas Eve and spend the day getting to know each other. And it includes the beautiful sort of Baltimore 34th Street lighting displays. So, you know, they clearly were shooting during the season to be able to get their hands on that stuff. You know, so yeah. And I think also we've seen a lot more diversity and variety in films, you know, something like Happiest Season or Single All the Way that are centered on, queer couples that we would not have seen maybe in earlier years. So, yeah, I think we're constantly expanding the definitions of what counts as a Christmas movie. This year I saw a Bangladeshi adaptation of A Christmas Carol set during the Muslim holiday of Eid. And it worked, you know, so, keep bringing on the switch 'em ups.
All right. Well, the new book is Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, second edition. Alonzo Duralde, pleasure as always. Thanks for coming back on Christmas Past.
Thank you for having me.
Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas is revised and updated for the 2025 Christmas season. Find it wherever books are sold and check the show notes to this episode for a link. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you again soon. What Christmas movies are you watching to get into the season? Or if you're not ready for Christmas movies just yet, how are you feeling the Christmas spirit? I'd love to hear about it. You can reach out anytime. I'm at ChristmasPastPodcast@gmail.com or find Christmas Past on your favorite social media platform. If you don't see me there and you think I should be, reach out and let me know. Well, this season is just getting warmed up and I can't wait to spend another one with you. It will be season 10 of Christmas Past, and to celebrate, I'm going to switch things up just a little bit this season. I'll give you more details when the time is right. But rest assured, there's all kinds of fun and surprises in store, as well as the same cozy Christmas vibes you've come to expect. Speaking of which, it is never too early to send a Christmas memory to appear in one of the episodes this season. All you have to do is record yourself speaking into your phone's voice memo app and send it to ChristmasPastPodcast@gmail.com. Keep it reasonably short, clean, and family-friendly, and be sure to say your name and where you're from. Christmas Past is produced in wonderful Willow Glen, California, by yours truly, Brian Earle. Thanks so much to Alonzo Duralde, and thank you as always for listening. And if you're really feeling the Christmas spirit, why not help more people discover this show and help grow the Christmas Past family? It's as simple as telling a friend about it or leaving a rating and review. And if you do leave a review, I'll send you a Christmas Past sticker, and a handwritten Christmas card is my way of saying thanks any time of year. Reach out for details. And until we meet again, may your days be merry and bright.